Sound for the Blind. I'm Brian McKellen. Before we get into today's show, here's some exciting news for all ACB radio listeners. You now can listen to this and other ACB radio programs anytime on a telephone. Just dial 231-460-1047 and follow the instructions to listen to any ACB radio station. It's easy, and most of all, allows you to connect from anywhere. There is a phone connection. Now back to today's Speaking Out for the Blind show. Today's guest, Ramona Pearson, truly beat the odds, is a real-life bionic woman and the co-founder and CEO of a Palo Alto, California startup. The Valley Times reports that Ramona's legs are pierced together with cadaver and titanium bones. And if you ask Pearson nicely about the history of her replacement body parts, she'll tell you all about them. But don't forget that she was also blind. In 1984, Ramona, then a successful college student and Marine, became blind, and her body was mutilated after being hit by a drunk driver. After the accident, doctors reassembled Ramona by performing more than 100 surgeries. According to Bloomberg Businessweek, surgeons restored Ramona's vision after she had been blind for 11 years. Ramona Pearson joins us to talk about the accident and how she coped with her blindness and physical challenges, and that her courage to speak out pulled her through. Ramona will also talk about rehabilitation and her path to becoming successful in her military assignment, studying medical science at UC Berkeley, completing degrees in education and psychology, and participating in sports and finding time for leisure. Please note that some of our listeners may find portions of today's interview graphic. Welcome to the show, Ramona.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
Let's talk about your life before the accident. The Valley Times says that you were an academic and athletically gifted child. When you were a teenager, you taught yourself to swim and solve very complicated math problems. You solve these problems by just watching other people. Tell us about those early years, and what drove you to these high achievements?
So, as a kid, actually, I learned to swim as a very young child by watching my parent and other people swim, because I grew up in a beach town. I was born in Long Beach, so was always at the ocean and had great opportunities to see adults and older children swim. And it seemed like any time I'd watch somebody take on any sport, whether it was swimming or any other sport, I could emulate what they were doing very quickly and grow into a competitive level. Academically, it was very much the same way. I would, no matter what I read or saw being created, I was able to emulate whatever the educator was showing me or my colleagues, and then be able to build on top of it.
You went to UC Berkeley when you were just 16. How did you get so smart and enter this most prestigious school at a very young age?
You know, I believe, and I truly believe this, that we all have an incredible or limitless potential, and sometimes we don't find what that potential is. And sometimes education can actually thwart our potential. And so because I never had anybody tell me or educate out of me my ability to believe in creativity and just trying, I was always feeling free to learn and to experiment and approach life like a scientist. And I think many young people in education today are sometimes, they'll buy into maybe self-destructive beliefs that they can't learn something, whereas perhaps they just hadn't been able to explore new ways of learning things in through different modalities or means.
I was looking at the Valley Times and Bloomberg Businessweek. While you were going to Berkeley, you did so well on this standardized test that the results of that test were looked at by military recruiters. They came to your dorm room and learned that you had barely any money to eat. So the Marines offered to pay for your last 2 years of college in exchange for enlisting in the Marines. You took that job and you went to work as a Marine for the Marine Corps Air Station, El Toro. That's near Irvine, California. What was your experience as a Marine? And maybe just give us an example of how you might have, if had to, speak out about your ability to do the job.
So, you know, when I joined the Marine Corps, I was definitely a serving student, and I think most young people who are in college are balancing their trying to figure out how to survive financially when they're in college, and I had so many assumptions about what a scholarship meant, and so my assumptions were basically wrong. So the opportunity to have three meals a day in the Marine Corps was a good option for me. So I joined the Marine Corps, and they offered to pay for college, and there are a lot of GI bills out today that allow for military to pay for all of our college experiences. When I joined the Marine Corps, I actually was stationed back east, and then, of course, like in most military instances, you move around a lot. So El Toro was my last station, and my job, you know, I wish I could say I had a very interesting job. I thought I'd have more of, normal soldier's experience, but I was attached to a fighter attack squadron, and instead of running around in the jungle. So in fact, my job was more of a desk job, applying the mathematics in which I was learning. So back in those days, we didn't have Google Earth, and so they brought on people like me to be Google Earth.
While you were in the Marine Corps, you got to come up with these special algorithms. This is the math thing. To help the F-18 fighter attack squadron guide their mission and find Russia's nuclear sites. Also, when you worked there during the early part of the Gulf War in the 80s, the U.S. Army found that desert sand wasn't only destroying the planes, but also the MRIs, the MRI machines that go around your head. The doctors operating on the members of the military with the brain injuries, they had to use only grainy images from the malfunctioning machines. But you solved this problem. You developed a series of algorithms to sharpen the MRI images. Tell us about your passion for math and science and your career dreams at this particular time.
So for me, mathematics is a version of language, and it's a language that is universal across all people. And so my desire to have the ability to communicate and solve problems, I figured that mathematics and numbers is the best way to have a universal language. And so my attractiveness, or I was attracted to it because it opens up so many doors in math and science and helping us solve problems as we study the universe or study more comprehensive problems on Earth. It helps us in the medical institutions and technology institutions. In fact, our company is focused on building cognitive models of how users learn so that we can build better recommendations and provide better learning resources to people just in time. So mathematics to me is like the door to the universe.
So now let's talk about the accident. In April of 1984, when you were 22, you and your dog Chips went on this run through a suburban neighborhood near the Marine Base. You stopped at an intersection and bounced in place while waiting for the light to change. When you and Chip started walking across the street, a drunk driver ran a red light and hit the both of you. Chip was hit first before you, and he died instantly then the drunk driver hit you so hard that your body basically exploded. The car that ran over you sliced your throat open and ripped your chest apart. This is what I was reading from the Valley Times. Your lungs and heart, they were fully exposed. One passerby saw you on the street, and he massaged your heart with his hand. And another person opened your windpipe using two pens. Then you described, quote, moments of being dead, end quote, while you were in the ambulance and being taken to the hospital. What, if any, can you remember from the crash? And maybe some of what these Good Samaritans have even shared with you.
So the only thing I remember about my accident at that time was the feeling of having a grenade go off in my mouth. Not that I've had a grenade
Wow.
go off in my mouth, but having that feeling of an explosion happening and just the sense of blood pouring out of me and my world dimming out from me. So that's basically all I can remember from the accident. I was fortunate enough as, imagine waking up from a coma 18 months later, how confused you might be and not knowing why you can't see, why you can't speak, and why you're in pain and essentially having to piece your life back together and try to understand that it is 18 months later. So over time, I had learned that various people had stepped in to save my life along the way in order for me to be able to make it to the hospital and then through. So I often talk about radical collaboration, and it's because so many people had to participate in saving my life out on the street and then saving my life on the way to the hospital and keeping me alive and trying new things out. So I'm the recipient of a lot of technologies and innovations that have occurred along the way. So I'm a true believer in innovation and technology because I am the product of innovations and technologies that have occurred. And I feel fortunate that I was born at the time where we were beginning to bring technologies into the forefront, into the sciences and medical fields, because every time something failed or something new needed to happen, some young startup or young person had invented something just in time to either replace part of my foot or part of my leg or to enable me to get the restoration of my sight back in one eye and just survive, because at that time they just started using medically induced, putting people in medically induced comas, and they learned a lot about putting a person in a bed of ice so that they reduce their blood flow and preserve many of the brain activities while slowing things down.
Well, we're talking about blindness, Ramona. I've had several surgeries in my own life. One of the operations helped restore my sight by reattaching my retina, and I understand from reading the article about you in the Valley Times, you miraculously regained your sight in 1996. What surgery was performed to restore your vision, and what were the new challenges now that you faced as a sighted person?
So one of the biggest things, it's interesting because I think about how all the different paths of learning I've had to have, and it's the reason I believe in lifelong learning. And you know, when you're a child, you take for granted being able to see if you're born a sighted person, and learning to speak by emulating your parents, and all of the things that you learn come so naturally and easily. And then as an adult, I was a young adult when I lost my sight, and I had to learn how to be a blind person. And I learned a lot from people around me, especially at the Braille Institute, from the senior citizens when I ended up in a senior home, and who really tried, these were sighted people who were trying to help me learn how to be a blind person, and sometimes it didn't work out.
So you had gone back to school after the accident. You went to Northwestern Community College in the town of Rangeli, Colorado. And then you went to Fort Lewis College in Durango. And you did several leisure and recreational opportunities, including being a blind rock climber, cross-country skier, and continued tandem biker. And you earned some silver medals, and you even qualified for the Paralympics and set some records. So tell me about these educational and athletic achievements, just briefly.
So, yeah, I went back to school, and I ended up getting involved in the athletics again, for several reasons. One, it allowed me to get connected back into the student body. Also, I really felt adventurous and wanted to learn everything, and I also knew I was struggling to be able to walk normally again. So I kept having knee surgeries every 6 months, so I'd have to go through rehabilitation in a swimming pool, learning to walk in the pool, and then I'd have surgery again. So ultimately, when things stabilized a little bit, I had been in at Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, and Yeti Bikes in Cannondale and Beauville had cycling teams there. So some of the folks always saw me hobbling around the town with a guide dog and a cast on all the time. So one of the students was also on one of these mountain bike teams and offered to help me get a tandem bike. So that started my whole adventure of getting on bikes. And then student after student would take turns steering the bike, the tandem bike. And what that did for me was a couple of things. One, allowed me to get on the back of the bike and push through the pain to be able to pedal again, to get my leg to become more mobile, which helped me walk normally again, and also helped me feel the freedom of having adventures and being out socially and having the wind in my face again. So I missed that part of my life of being able to ride a bike and to have the wind in the speed. So student after student would invite me to do tandem riding, and pretty soon the head of one of these cycling teams had called somebody on the East Coast and said, you know, this woman really is pretty good at cycling, and, you know, how would you like to get her involved in the master cycling team. So I ended up just on a whim flying out to the East Coast, and I joined the master cycling team, and they started just taking me on these competitive cycling programs with pedaling against other sighted tandem teams. And so it didn't matter whether I was racing around against other blind folks or sighted folks. It was tandem cycling at its best. And I also was very involved in rock climbing, and that sounds weird. I used to call it brailing the rocks. So friends of mine at Durango would take me out with them when they'd go rock climbing, and because I was had ropes on and they'd belay me, they taught me how to climb, and it was a phenomenal experience to be able to feel the rock and try to find my pathway up, some sheer cliffs.
After you went to Fort Lewis College, you got your master's degree in education from USF. Then from 97 until 2000. You worked on your master's degree in social research and political psychology at the New School in New York, and your doctoral degree in neuroclinical psychology at Palo Alto University, right in California. And you also, and you went on to, as one of your first jobs, working as a neuroscientist at the Palo Alto Brain Center for the VA hospital. And you worked on this brain research center and aided soldiers coming back from the Middle East. So getting these special degrees and getting this job with the VA just set your life on a new course. You got together with the VA and you studied how returning soldiers remember things and learn skills. How did this job set you on a new direction?
You know, that's a very great question, actually, because what it had done is, you know, when I came back, I had a lot of surgeries and I had to overcome a lot of things, especially on learning to speak again, of course, like I've mentioned. But I also had to relearn how to process to speak, and the opportunity to work with the VA and to participate with the lives of people who had traumatic brain injuries became a passion of mine, and I really wanted to figure out ways to help other people at in a more direct way to help them get back into their lives and to get back on path for themselves, regardless of, you know, what that path might be ultimately. And so I was very interested in really looking at the cognitive versus functional rehabilitation and figuring out some of the best ways to create neural assessments that would identify best pathways for people to recover from traumatic brain injuries.
You co-founded Eclara.
Yes.
And you're the firm's chief executive officer.
Right.
Tell me briefly about Eclara. Why you started the company and just a couple of achievements.
You know, it's interesting because I started the company because it felt like I had unfinished business, and I was very interested in how adults learn. And so from my experiences, I was very focused on, you know, what it takes to become a lifelong learner. And so the company's modeled after lifelong learning. And one of our big accomplishments was we won a deal in Australia, so we are the platform that brings, personalized learning for adults. And so our platform in Australia is used by educators there to help them learn and share resources with each other in a social context. So imagine the best parts of Facebook, the best parts of Google, and with a learning overlay, and that's what our platform is. We were able to bring social learning and be able to recommend the learning pathways for adults and the content resources and the experts they need to be able to meet their potential. And now we just won a very major deal in Mexico, and we're rolling out to the educators in Mexico now at scale. And, we just keep winning these very large-scale opportunities in worldwide, and we feel honored to have this opportunity to help education and national workforce opportunities to be able to change their workforce into the 21st century.
Okay. So, Ramona, we wish you the very best of success at Eclara and in all of your life endeavors.
Thank you.
You're
so
truly
much.
An inspiration to us all. And you're an example of the importance to speak out and be just a self-advocate, as well as advocating for others with life challenges or educational needs. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Before we go, let me give listeners a quick reminder. I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode or past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.